This episode of the Deck Tees Podcast is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Become a part of their customer rewards program when you make any purchase and receive discounts on all future orders. That is CoolStuffInc.com. Episode 112 of the Deck Tees Podcast. I am your host, Erin Campbell. My guest tonight is one of the smart and spunky voices behind the official Magic Twitter account. She is community manager Allison Lures. Hello.
Hi, how's it going?
I am great. How are you?
Good. I love being described as spunky. It's one of my favorite adjectives.
I always try to come up with neat words.
Spunky is very versatile. I think that's why I like it so much. Thank you.
Yeah. I was trying to come up with some nice adjectives. You know, like I didn't want to focus on your looks, but I didn't want to just focus on your brain. Like I wanted to wrap you in the whole package.
I like that. Packages are great.
Yeah. I will never forget the first time that I encountered you. I remember it was when M15 was coming out, and they were doing the Garrick cardboard cutout with the axe.
Oh, yeah, that.
And Wizards was taking pictures of their various employees doing poses with the axe, and Gavin Verhey's pose is actually the wallpaper on my phone.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Because I love Gavin.
I hope he knows that.
He does, and I don't think he had anything to say about it. And I remember going through the pictures.
It's an honor to be the wallpaper of someone else's phone.
Indeed, especially because we're not close like that, you know. So people often see that and go, "Is that your boyfriend?" And I'm like, "Yeah,
sure, of course, yes." Yes, he's very smart. He works for Wizards. He also poses next to a lot of cardboard.
He's a good sport about it. But I remember going through the pictures, and then I saw this woman in a pencil skirt and a very crisp blouse, holding this axe that was much bigger than she was. Yes. And I was immediately drawn to you. And I was like, I don't know who she is, but I love her.
I can usually be found wearing some variant of a pencil skirt, and there's usually some form of large foam weapon nearby. So I think it's a really good snapshot of my personality.
And you're usually under a vent, right?
Yes, I am. My cubicle is directly underneath like the one vent on the fourth floor. So in addition to the pencil skirt and the, you know, decently nice blouse and probably some like nice shoes, I usually have a really, really shitty fleece blanket around me. I'm not kidding. It's this Avengers blanket that my friends got for me about a year ago. It looks like a towel, and it's the one thing that keeps me warm in my cubicle. It's pretty sad. So imagine, if you will, a very fancy person with a really, really crappy Marvel blanket. And that's me like 90% of the time.
And I remember when we were at the Community Cup, you were also under a vent, and most of the time you were chattering away.
Yep. Yeah. In addition to the nice clothes, I usually like to keep at least 5 layers of also similarly nice, if not worse, clothes on top of it. I chill easy.
Yeah. And I actually like being cold. I'm one of the people that doesn't like being warm.
Oh, that's probably why you live in Hoth. That would make a lot of sense.
And I have to say, the Community Cup was the moment where I felt like I grew closer to you, and I enjoyed you even more, because
it was my first time meeting you in person too.
Yeah, I mean, you really were like the unofficial ninth member.
Secretly, yes. Yeah, I was not allowed to compete because I was the Switzerland of both teams. I could claim allegiance to neither the WotC team nor to the community, but I like to think that I got along with both. And honestly, I was on your guys' team the entire time. I was pulling for you. Yeah. I knew how it would turn out in the end. Oh, duh, of course.
Well, there were so many memorable moments that you were a part of, and I still think that one of the best moments was when you and Scotty and I and all of us, we were on the Ducks tour.
Oh, the Ducks tour.
And all of a sudden, Macklemore came on, which was the, what is it called?
Can't Hold Us. That's
exactly.
It.
And Scotty had started rapping, and we knew that Scotty had some games, so we weren't surprised. Yeah. And Scotty was going at it very Macklemore. Like, he was doing a lot of the hand gestures. And then all of a sudden, you chimed in, and you kept up word for word.
Thank you. It's a little known fact. If you spend more than about like 40 minutes in Seattle, your brain just instantly kind of vibrates on the same level as Macklemore, and all of his songs will get stuck in your head, and it is impossible to not memorize every single one of them. Now, that's not true at all. I love hip hop. I remember being in college. I went to Western Washington University, which is about 45 minutes away from the Canadian border. So it's basically Canada. Mm-hmm. And when I was in school, I remember Macklemore came to tour up there, going to go see shows. And this was like way before he got popular. So there would be like maybe 100 people at these things, and it would be fun, have a good time. And so once he actually got popular, I was really concerned. And I imagine this is what it must have felt like to be in Seattle in 1992 when other people realized that we existed. Mm-hmm. And it's this deep panic of, oh my God, I'm supposed to be cool now. I thought that I was the weird one in the flannel in the corner. No one's, they think that I'm neat. Oh, that's cool. That's kind of what it felt like. And so I, being able to quickly and rap alongside dear Scotty Mac on that awful duck tour was definitely the highlight, one of the highlights of that weekend for me.
Yeah, that whole weekend was pretty magical. I still have moments where I, you know, one thing I like to tell people is I had no idea how positive it would be. You know, there was never any drama. There was never any tension. You know, I really did not expect to get as attached to everybody as I did. You know, and that last night I cried like a baby. Oh. I did not want to go. I was very sad.
I was sad for it to be over, too. It was my first Community Cup as well. I've only been working for Wizards since last January. And so I'd heard, you know, stories and all this tale of, oh, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be wonderful. And I'm like, yeah, I'm working my butt off to make sure it is. It better be awesome. And it was awesome. It was wonderful. And the people that we invited were so, so, so friendly and so talented and just so much fun to be around. I really didn't want that weekend to end. It was so much fun.
Yeah. And it's been neat watching everybody sort of take off after the event. Like Scotty broke off on his own and started streaming. And then Tom. Tom Ross the other day just came in second place at the GP.
I know, and Frank's been killing it. It's just so much fun to watch everyone.
Yeah, I almost feel like they're mama.
Spread their wings and fly away. Exactly. Like my sons, they're doing so well, and I'm just so proud of them.
All right, so let's get started. Let's focus on you, my dear. Sure. You grew up in Pasco, Washington. Pasco, Washington. What was that like? What was your childhood like?
So, I come from a long line of people living in places where they really don't belong. My mother's family grew up in Nigeria in West Africa. They moved down there in the early 1900s because they decided that Scotland was cold. And they just lived there for a while until the 70s when they moved to Florida because they decided that Nigeria was unsafe, which it was. And after that, they just kind of bounced around. And so I grew up in this very half English household in the middle of rural Eastern Washington. So most of my friends were very, very Mormon, very, very conservative. And then there was my family who were all secret socialists living in the middle of nowhere. So growing up, I didn't have a lot of girlfriends. It was mostly me, my brother, and all of his buddies who would hang out all the time. I hated it in Pasco. I mean, the people are lovely, but it's a very ugly desert, and there's not much to do other than just kind of exist. And because all of my friends were very, very conservative, we didn't even like go out to fields to like drink and party like the rest of the farm kids. Our idea was of a crazy time was like, I don't know, buying a bunch of forks and sticking it in someone else's lawn in the middle of the night. Or going out and getting really messed up on Mountain Dew. Like, that's the childhood I had. It was a little pathetic. I have semi-fond memories of Pasco, but I knew that when I was going to leave for college, I couldn't go somewhere outside the state because I just couldn't afford it. So I decided on the place that was as far away from my hometown, but still in state, which was Bellingham, Washington, in the absolute opposite corner of the state of Washington.
Now, was there any sort of rebellion on your part because you were so, so good and you were in such a conservative background for so long? Did you cut loose a little bit in school?
Man, I wish. I'm such a good kid. It's not fair. Like, really, I wish that I were rebellious and I could say, oh, yeah, I super cut loose when I was in college. No, I didn't. My grades were awesome, and I participated in extracurricular activities. The only real rebellion I guess I've ever done is majoring in theater against made a lot of sense at the time, and that's about as deep as I ever got, and even that turned out to be like really successful, so I guess it wasn't much of a rebellion anyway. So I'm really bad at sticking it to the man. I really wish I could be a bad girl and like I don't know. I wish I rode a motorcycle, and I wish I don't know, like spray painted things. I don't know what bad people do.
So did any of your, now have you been a geek for a long time? Like, were you a
Oh, God,
geeky kid?
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Actually, no, I think that might be the only form of rebellion I've got going for me. I didn't know any other geeky girls growing up. It was just me and my brother and all of his friends. And I remember feeling a lot of shame because of that when I was growing up. I felt a lot of shame that I didn't like a lot of the same things that my girlfriends did, that I would much rather go and play D&D or Axis and Allies with my brothers for hours in the back of the shed than go out and, I don't know, do whatever girls do. And so I had girlfriends growing up, and I'm still very close with them, but most of my interests have always been in games or in stories more than anything else.
So how did you get over that, that feeling of being the odd girl out, because you liked games?
I realized that it was a lot more fun to be honest with myself. And the guys appreciated it a lot more when I dropped the macho, oh, I'm a girl, which means I have to be awesome at games thing, and just embrace the fact that, hey, I don't need to be awesome. I just need to have fun. And learning to get over that made being myself a lot easier. And I was able to meet people I never would have met otherwise. Embracing the fact that I'm a goddamn nerd got me jobs and got me friends and opened up so many more opportunities than I would have had if I had just kept my mouth shut and tried to cover up what I was interested in.
That feeling you said of feeling like you had to be good, because you were a girl, I like to call that the mantle. And I think that every girl has put on the mantle at some point, whether they play
You have
magic.
to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
You
there's that,
have to so you can learn to get over it, really.
And there's that feeling of, I have to be good for all girls. And if I'm not good, then I'm
Yes.
the bad girl. And nobody wants to hang
Exactly.
out with the bad girl who doesn't know how to
Right.
play. And
Yeah, and that world kind of transcends into the comedy world as well. So I'm a comedian. I do improv professionally, and that is very much an attitude of both the universes of gaming and of comedy. It's a total boys club, and if you are the girl, then you have to be good. And that is such an unhealthy attitude to have because it limits whatever you're capable of actually doing. I've met so many girls who think that they need to swear the most, that they need to try and put other people down as much as possible to make them seem like the bigger person or the better person. And really, it just ends up making you not appear weak, but not be able to compete on the same level as you normally would without trying to put that on in the first place.
I feel like it also makes you feel different. Like I know, like for a while, I admit that I'm sometimes not always the nicest person. Like I can be a little catty and I can be a little judgmental. And I've noticed as my following has grown and the show has grown, I feel like I appreciate more when people recognize me for my good traits or for the good things I do versus when I'm being catty. So if
Yes.
somebody retweets me when I'm feeling bitchy, there's a feeling like, okay, yeah, I got a retweet or five, that's cool. But when somebody, when I've hit a milestone or I preach a good message, like I was watching the GP yesterday and the commentators were saying, if you're going to play an eternal format, you should play what play what you
Yes.
love. And when I tweet an affirmation like that or something positive and I see retweets from that, it feels so much better
Yeah,
than if I were
exactly.
doing it to be bitchy because people think I should be or to, whatever. It just feels better when you're positive,
Definitely. Putting out positive vibes into the world is so much more satisfying and so much more gratifying than expressing something out of defensive mechanisms or just expressing something out of bitchiness. If you put good things out into the world, good stuff comes back. I'm a tremendously positive person because of that reason. It just saves you a lot of energy in the long run.
And I've definitely reached a point where I want more of that. So people like
Yeah,
you,
got
I
it.
just want to like cling, hold you
Yeah.
close and just huddle up and just soak it all in.
Well, I like being clung to, so it's all good.
So
Clung
you
away.
graduated from Western Washington University, and
Sure it
that's
is.
where you discovered improv, right?
Yes.
How did you stumble on that?
When I was in high school, I went to this thespian camp that they had at Western because I'm a goddamn geek and that's what we do. And I remember going to a improv performance that they had there, and it was amazing. I've never really been the type to like go out and perform because I want people to stare at me, but watching the brain of someone who does comedy, like watching someone be that fast and that funny, has always been fascinating to me. And so I watch these people who are just like a little bit older than me going up there and coming up with these universes off the top of their heads. And I thought, oh, that sounds neat. Maybe I could do that. And so on the first day of college, I tracked them down and I basically demanded to come to their meetings. And so they said, oh, sure, go for it. And a couple of months later, I got into the troupe, the Dead Parrot Society. Mm. It is a club that is named after two very old puns. And yeah, so I started playing with them. And you know that feeling when you start doing something and you realize, oh, shit, I think I'm good at this? Mm-hmm. And it's surprising at first. Like, I didn't expect to have it both enjoy something and not suck at it. It was like that.
Yeah.
And so I played with them for several years. My senior year, when I was there at school, we competed in the National College Improv Tournament, and our team of five won nationals that year. So around 2,100, 2,200 improvisers from across the country, our team of five won everything. And it was amazing to be able to meet people from all over the country with the same interests as me. And I've been producing with the College Improv Tournament ever since. I get to fly around the country and host these tournaments to find the comedians who will be on TV and movies like 10 years down the line. So that's been a huge part of my life, and it is my favorite thing, one of my favorite things in the world. I love making people laugh. I love telling stories. And I love the art of collaboratively creating something with other people.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is an improv tournament like? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So the format that we use is we basically tell people you have 25 minutes to do whatever you want. You Ooh. Can go up there and do like a bunch of really short scenes. You can go up there and do a long form set. Long form meaning that you get suggestions at the beginning and you use those throughout the entire thing without having to come back to the audience for more. I've seen some people go on and do 20 minutes of just the same six people playing the same six characters in real time with no scene cuts. I've seen people go up there and make up a serious, serious play with very few laughs for the entire 25 minutes. A couple of people did some stuff that was nearly like silent. There wasn't any conversation. If you go up there, you do the best set that you can. And the judges are all improv professionals from across the country. And they will subjectively judge whatever is up there and determine who is the best.
Now, what did you do the last time you were there?
So when we performed in 2011, we did a format that we call Coffee Date. Mm-hmm. And what that is it's it starts with two improvisers meeting for coffee. And they tell each other about their day. And as one person's talking about their day, you flash back to find out what happened before you got there. And the thing that our group liked to do is we were big fans of dicking around with time because it's fun. So I remember walking on stage at the very beginning of it and resetting my nose as if it had been broken. Like the first thing I did was just crack my nose back in place. And we sat down and had a conversation. And 15 minutes later, we had jumped back in time to see how my day had gone. And there was one point where I was standing waiting for the bus. And one of my fellow improvisers came over and said, "Hey, how are you doing?" And I said, "Fine." And he punched me in the nose, mm-hmm. thus breaking my nose for later in the scene. So, yeah, you can do all sorts of things in improv. And I love that it exists sort of outside of time and outside of the reality that we live in right now. And there's no one directing you what to do next. Mm-hmm.
Now, are you opposed to like typical stand-up where you just stand in front of the mic and you have like a set and you know, you talk in front of people? Is that something you have any interest in?
Stand-up is terrifying. Oh. I will never, 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 never do stand-up. The nice thing about improv is that if I mess up, there are five other people who can jump in and save me. Mm. It's not just me fending for myself in front of a crowd of ravenous, drunken strangers. It's me with a team at my back and someone that I know I can depend on to save my ass if I need it. It's a level of trust that doesn't really exist in stand-up or sketch or anything like that.
I also feel like there's that damn stereotype that follows around the stand-up people where they're secretly damaged and you know they're doing it to feel better about themselves or to quell that insecurity that gnaws at them. And I don't, you know, you just don't really hear that about the improv comics.
Yeah.
You know, you don't hear.
We're better at hiding it. every comedian I think I've ever met is deeply messed up in some way or another. But because the improvisers have to work with each other a lot more, I think they're a lot better at hiding it for the most part.
So, and that includes yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt. No, I will be the first to admit that we all have problems. Mm-hmm. And going up and making people laugh makes mine feel a lot smaller. Mm-hmm. So that's why I do it.
Now, prior to getting a job at Wizards of the Coast, had you ever played magic before?
Yes, I had.
And when did you discover it?
College, mostly. Yeah, growing up, I played a ton of table games. That was mostly what I did. And I remember in college, I was hanging out with some friends. We had been playing, like, Carcassonne or something like that. I don't know. It was one of those. And someone just said, hey, who wants to play Magic Garbage? And me, being an idiot, thought that that was, like, the full title of the game. And I was like, wow, what's Magic Garbage? That sounds neat. And he goes into his bedroom, comes back out with this disgusting shoebox and sets it on the table, opens it up. And it's just this like hodgepodge of magic cards from every era, but nothing was interesting or of worth or just value. It was just awful. It was garbage. Mm-hmm. And he pulled out these two ancient looking decks and taught me how to play Magic that day. I was confused. But it was fun. And we came back to it every now and then. I would play fairly infrequently because I was busy. But it wasn't until I was in the interview process for this job that I called that same friend back up. And I demanded to know where his Magic Garbage was because I need to practice immediately. And so I got back into it again over the last year. And since I've started working at Wizards, obviously I play every day, at least every day. And because my coworkers are tremendously, tremendously talented, I have gotten a lot better than I was when I first learned how to play Magic Garbage when I was in college.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that always amazes me when I'm in the area is the people who, you know, work for Wizards. They spend so much of their time being around Magic, and then they want to play it when they get home. And I'm always amazed at that. And I wonder, like, what keeps them so interested in it? Because I would think that anybody else, you know, let's say you're a chef, you don't want to come home and cook, or, you know, I deal with mortgages and finance. I don't want to talk loan adjustments when I get home. Like, how do you keep it fresh and exciting?
It's a different environment. I feel like if I were a chef, obviously I don't have all the materials that I do at my house, but I still want to make something. And it's more of a challenge to try and make things with the stuff that you have around you. Mm. Whenever I run a draft for my friends, it's always really exciting because although it may not be new to me, the things that they're looking at, they might have not have seen the set for the first time yet. And so I get to go through that process of discovery again, and I get to try things out with a different set of brains than I would at work. Mm-hmm. Being able to share things in a new way is always exciting. And taking what I do home with me just means that I have more people to play with and more minds to pull from whenever I do. Mm-hmm. So
tell me how you got started with Wizards.
It was a complete chance interview. So after graduating from college, I worked for Cheeseburger for 2 years. And that Cheeseburger, Lolcats Cheeseburger, I was the poor soul in charge of lolcats.cheeseburger.com for 2 years. 2 years. Now, the fun part of working there was that I got to do humor writing, which is, you know, that's what I love doing. And I did some social media at the same time. So I basically just got to make jokes all day and be friendly with people and try and build my community of cat people. So that was a fun, strange job.
And now, were you the person that actually writes the Icon has on the cats, or were you just
Okay. So all of those are user submitted.
Okay.
So users have a template and they can go through and fill out everything. I got to be like the fancy content moderator who basically curated everything that you'd see. So what I would do is I'd go through and I'd pick the ones I knew the community would love. And then every now and then I would pick out one that was just so weird and goddamn bizarre that it made me laugh. And I knew it wouldn't make anyone else laugh, but I was in charge, so I got to stick it up anyway. I like to cater to, obviously, the cat people, but also the deep internet nerds like myself who like things that don't make sense. So it was a fun job.
And then you get the job at Wizards.
Yes.
What was that interview like?
It was a long interview process. I interviewed 3 separate times for only 2 different people, once for my contractor and twice for Trick Jarrett, my manager right now. And those were solid. There was some basic quizzing. Which I passed, so that's nice. But mostly it was asking about my background, and I know that Trick went through my Twitter feed before I actually got hired, so I'm glad that I didn't do anything too tremendously embarrassing.
Yeah, he just unfollowed me this week, so it's totally fine.
Oh no, really?
Yeah, Trick and I have a very, like, we go back and forth. Like, he will follow me for a bit, and then he will unfollow me, and then he comes back. And I love me some Trick. I love me some Trick, so.
Okay, well, I'm going to guilt him into following you again. Because that's quite rude what he did.
You don't have to do that.
Yes, I do. Defending your honor.
Oh. So what are your responsibilities as a community manager? Because I feel like that term can mean different things to different people. So what do you do?
Mostly what I do is I'm in charge of the social presence for Magic, mostly Magic Online right now, on Twitter, Reddit, Facebook, and hopefully some other social platforms in the future. It's my job to help talk to people when they need help figuring out how to talk to the community. So I help out PR. I help out some of our technical teams translate what they want to say to the public. I also make sure that all of our users are happy, that our communities basically are healthy and talking and engaging. If no one's engaging, if no one's talking or, you know, interacting with us, then something's wrong. If they're all very, very angry, then definitely something's wrong. And it's my job to kind of relay that message from our users to the rest of Wizards.
Mm-hmm. And what do you like the most about your job or working for the company?
I love talking to people. I love being able to spend my day following conversations and being able to engage with users about things that are happening. Mm-hmm. My favorite part of my day is always going through Reddit and figuring out like what's probably going to be popular on the page in the next 24 hours, jumping in and just kind of interacting with our users and talking to them like people, because they're people and I'm a person. And that's what my job really is to show that Wizards is not just a giant nameless company, but we're a collection of people. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Do you ever get exhausted or burned out from all the interaction?
Nah, no. Never. Okay. No, I'm a tightly wound cord of energy. I never stop. I'm a battery.
And is there anything that's difficult about your job or that you may not care for?
Well, I probably wouldn't be doing it if there weren't too many things. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's always tricky if there's something that the community doesn't enjoy or something that they're displeased with. But learning to deal with that and making that part of my day is what I do. Mm-hmm. So my job is translating the feelings of the community back to my employers, obviously. And that includes translating whatever messages they may have. So some days can get a little bit long, but at the end of the day, I just remember that these are still people and a lot of them are my friends. And just because they are very angry with something doesn't mean that they're directly angry at me. Mm-hmm. So.
Now, I discovered something very interesting about you when I was researching you. I found that you have a bio on the Bravo TV website. You were described as a content moderator who, quote, knows all things geek speak and cat lady.
Not necessarily cat lady. They made that up. But geek speak, yes.
What are you doing on the Bravo website?
Okay. So think back, if you will, to the faraway time of 2012.
Are you a real housewife?
No. Okay. I wish I was. I wish. That would be so much better if I was. But the story is so much more sad than that.
Can you imagine that, though? The Real Housewives of WotC. That would be fantastic.
Oh, man. Like, no one would watch, but it would be so good. It would just be a lot of really functional relationships and, like, small, modestly sized houses. And like going to IKEA, and that's like where all the drama happens because that's the only thing in Denton. Anyway, so back in 2012, while I was at Cheeseburger, we were approached initially by Animal Planet saying that they wanted to make a documentary about what it's like to work for Cheeseburger. Because I'm sure that they thought that we made all of the cat pictures ourselves and that we had like a bunch of animals running around the office and stuff like that. And when they pitched the show to us, the higher ups were like, that sounds like a good idea. You know, that sounds like a lot of fun. Unfortunately, Animal Planet had to drop it, but Bravo swooped in like a mother eagle and picked it up and said, we will take it. We will take this show to Mordor. And the show that they pitched to us was that, that they wanted to make a show about what it's like to work for Cheeseburger. And they interviewed me since I worked there and that was my actual job. And initially I was like, yeah, this sounds like fun. And the thing about Cheeseburger is that the people that worked there were all deep internet nerds. Like, you know that kid in high school who you could tell, like, spent most of his days on the computer probably doing really illegal things but would never do anything illegal in real life? Mm-hmm. That was me. And that was all of the other people that I worked with. So we figured, you know, there's some juicy stuff to work with here. I mean, most of my day was spent going through queues and queues of lolcats and taking any porn I could find out of it. That was my job. And so we all heard that they wanted to make a show about us. And we're like, oh, yeah, there's some weird ass stuff that goes up here. Let's do it. And I remember the first day of filming, they had set up this scenario for us to be in. They didn't just like carry a camera to whatever a meeting was. They fabricated this meeting that we were in. And I sat down, and before filming started, I looked around to everyone else who was in the room, and I realized this is a very different show than what they pitched us. So I made a very quick decision, because I knew from looking around that they were either going to use whatever I said and turn me into a bitch, a flirt, or a really dumb woman. Mm-hmm. And I decided that I did not want to give them the ammunition to do any of that. And so from that moment until 6 weeks later, when we finished filming, I was as boring as I could possibly be. I was uninteresting in every sense of the word. I made sure to never input anything that was interesting or funny or showed off any hint of personality. And it worked. Mm-hmm. And when the show aired, it was awful. And it was so just not, it wasn't anything like they had told us. It was what you would expect to see on a Bravo show. Mm-hmm. And no one noticed me. Mm-hmm. And I faded into the background. And the only thing of note that came out of that was that one Bravo profile on me where they, most of the stuff isn't true. And I'm pretty sure the only place that you can find that show is on iTunes. You have to buy it. Mm-hmm. In case you like buying things on the internet, I've tried to torrent my show multiple times and I can't find a single good feed anywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, it's nowhere. I don't recommend watching it. It's pretty boring, but I will always win two truths and a lie from here on out because I don't think anyone would believe that I was on a Bravo reality show, but I, that
now, if you don't mind me playing devil's advocate for a little bit here,
please.
How did you guys not know that Bravo was going to do that? Because Bravo has sort of become known for the Real Housewives and all of those shows that, you know, just sort of stir the pot and do what they're going to do. Like, you know, that would be, I wouldn't be surprised that it was going in that direction. Like, you guys really didn't know?
I think we had a sense. I had a sense. Mm-hmm. But most of us just really weren't sure.
Okay.
And just to kind of clarify, me and the rest of the cast, me and a lot of the producers remain really good friends. They were, the crew was amazing. They were so much fun. The show was super weird. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a really strange experience.
Do you think that you would be open to doing ever doing something like that again? Like, let's say a different, so even if it was like the World of Improv, you know, no.
Nah, no way. Nah, it's not for me. I very much like being in control of the things that I put out into the universe. And giving up some of that control to something where I wasn't sure how it would turn out was really strange and unsettling for me. Mm-hmm.
I kind of felt that way about the Community Cup to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I would, because I'm kind of like you in that I try to, you know, I don't photograph well. So when I put pictures out there, I try to make sure the lighting is dim, mm-hmm. you know, that I at least have some eyeliner on, you know, just to sort of be in control of that. And when I would go back and watch some of the videos, it'd be like, oh God, that angle was terrible. I look like Phyllis Diller. Or, you know, I remember just going through the Walk in the Plains video. And I think the only shot I was unhappy with was the introductory shot. I was pretty happy with everything else, but I was sitting there with my head in my hands going, I look terrible. And yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's frightening being able to give up that kind of control. And it's something that, in a way, we do every day. Mm-hmm. The stuff that I have up on my Twitter, I can control, but I can't really control how someone else will think about it. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of learning to release that consciousness, that shame that you have over how I may appear to other people. And that's kind of a large part of my job, too, is reconciling the fact that my name is in front of every single tweet that I send out. But the thing that you look at may not necessarily be exactly who I am. Mm-hmm. That's really confusing, actually. Don't use that. Hold on.
No, I totally get it.
Yeah. yeah, I don't know. It's we live in a really strange time when we have to kind of reconcile how people see ourselves versus how I see myself.
And there may be times that you can't even reconcile that. Like going back to the Community Cup thing, you know, I was picking on myself in a couple of the angles and my friend Hallie was like, but your hair was really pretty. And I couldn't see where she was coming from. Like, I appreciated the compliment and I knew that she was sincere, but no matter how hard I tried, when I would look at that cut, I did not see what she saw.
Yeah,
and there are some times where you just have to kind of throw your hands up and be like, I don't see what you see, but if you enjoy this, I'm going to let you enjoy that.
That's fair. Yeah. I'm pretty sure if you go back and look at those, you can see me shivering in the corner in the back, at least in like a solid 30% of the shots. I was very chilly and very, very, very ugly in that corner that day.
Well, I thought you were always radiant.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah.
See, perception.
Exactly. Exactly. So all this talk of cats, do you enjoy cats?
I actually can't stand cats. I love playing cat decks, but I can't stand actual cats.
Really?
Really.
Yeah. Wow. Do you have any pets? Yeah, dogs.
I wish. I'm never at home, so I can't even like keep plants. My house is this barren wasteland. There's nothing for me to tend to. It's very sad. But yeah, I've always been more of a dog person than a cat person.
Mm-hmm. See, I have a cat, but the only time I consider giving her up is when I think about a world with no cat hair. Like, I will forever be the girl with cat hair on my clothes. I have tried. I have a lint roller. I have tried to be that
girl.
Oh, you're
prepared. That's good.
But I have tried to be the one who diligently gets up in the morning and rolls, and it never fails. I've gone so far as to take the clothing right out of the dryer, lay it on the kitchen counter, because there can't possibly be cat hair there, and then pick it up in the morning, and somehow there's cat hair. So I've just given up.
Well, you got to keep persisting. You know, someday that cat hair-free world will be there.
Yeah, you know, whenever she makes me mad, I just look at her and it's like, I would, you know, I could have clothes with no cat hair. You could be gone, and then she comes.
Look how much I love you.
Right, right.
I've given you all of these things, and you don't appreciate anything. I think that's why I like dogs. You don't have to fight for affection. It just kind of happens.
Yeah. I know whenever I go to the spa and they always take my coat, obviously being wintertime, there are lots of black pea coats, and they offer to take your coat for you. And then when you're getting ready to go, they give you your coat back. And all I have to say is mine's the cat hair covered Calvin Klein. And then they're always like, they start off with this really shiny veneer, like, okay, ma'am, I'll totally get it for you. And then they're holding it by like the tip of their fingers, like, hey, do you need me to put it on you? Because I really don't want to.
Please take it. Would you like to put it on yourself? Because I don't do anything.
You get it. You get it. So in addition, while we're here debunking myths about you, your Bravo profile also said that you are a foodie who makes a mean coq au vin. Is that true?
Coq au vin. Yes, I do. I make a very good coq au vin.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, man. Okay. So like... Most French cooking is just putting a meat in a pot and then just putting a ton of alcohol on it and cooking shit out of it. That's pretty much all French cuisine. And that's what coq au vin is. It's a chicken with lots of goodness on top of it. And you basically pour an entire bottle of wine and then just cook crap out of it for like 4 hours. And it turns into magic. It's amazing. Yeah, I love food. I love making food for other people. My coworkers can attest that my pumpkin bars are amazing. I like making things. So, big fan of food.
What other types of food do you like to cook?
Let's see. I'm very good at meat pies. I taught myself how to make steak and kidney pies. Those are fantastic.
Steak and Kenny?
Kidney.
Kidney. Okay. Yes. Kidney. Ooh.
Steak and Kenny. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what happened to the rest of them, but it's steaks. They were great. let's see. I'm looking towards my refrigerator to try and like remember things I've made. Let's see. Oh, I made a really awesome potato gratin the other week. It was very cheesy. With lots of potatoes. I like making lots of different types of food. And living in Seattle, it's always easy to find someplace that sells something that you can make into something else. So, yeah.
And what type of food do you enjoy eating?
So my taste in food is very, very, very bipolar. I either love absolute just trash or really, 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 really fancy stuff. It's one or the other. I so rarely eat in the middle. For dinner tonight, for example, I had some Jack in the Box on my way over. And I'm planning on going to one of my favorite restaurants later this week, the Walrus and the Carpenter, for oysters on the half shell and some steak tartare. I am a person of many things, and medium boring food is not one of them.
So in addition to your job at Wizards, you still perform improv, and you actually co-founded your own theater company, Miriam Productions?
Miriam Miriam Productions, yes.
Okay, how did you do that? What was that like?
So it was mostly me and eight of my friends from Western Washington University, who all knew we'd be moving to Seattle. And we didn't want to fall into the trap of people who majored in theater and then just never did anything ever again. So we formed a nonprofit theater company. And over the last 2 years, I've co-written 3 full-length productions.
Wow.
We've produced soon to be 3 shows and 1 festival, we're hoping to tour the one we're working on right now. But yeah, my company also conveniently kind of doubles as my playgroup because we're a bunch of goddamn nerds. And so more often than once, we'll finish up with a rehearsal, then head over to someone's house and then just, like, I don't know, play crap for several hours. They're conveniently also my draft group because there's just enough people. Yeah, that's what we do. We write stuff and we make art. We make our own shows.
Now, do you find that your work as a community manager and your work in the theater ever intersect? Like, has one ever helped you with the other?
In a way, it's all communicating. The thing I learned most from doing what I did in school and co-owning my own theater company now is learning how to take criticism and learning how to communicate with others who may not communicate on the same level that you do. So there are many different ways that people express themselves to others. And sometimes the way that you talk to one person can't be the same way that you talk to someone else. Learning that directly and in person in the theater world, that's a lesson that you have to learn fast and mm-hmm. you have to learn easy. Otherwise, you will never, ever work ever again. Whereas in the gaming and community world that I'm in on the other half of my life, I feel like I can apply a lot of those communication skills from one place to the other fairly easily, especially since I learned all of those lessons in theater a lot earlier than life.
Mm-hmm. Was it easy for you to merge your worlds, or was there a point, or was there a time where you tried to, like, keep them separate? Like, this is my theater life and this is my work life.
Nah, they've overlapped my entire life. Okay. There's no point in trying to separate those. Mm-hmm. I've been doing theater for as long as I can remember, and I've been gaming for as long as I can remember too. Mm-hmm. They've never really been separate for me, just different parts of the same thing. Mm-hmm. And they are very similar in a lot of different ways. But yeah, I've never really felt like I needed to segregate one side of my life from the other.
I would imagine it also helps you to be able to think on your feet. Like, you know, when somebody is angrily tweeting you about their experience, and they want an answer now and they don't want to hear your lines. And if you don't tweet them back right away, it means you're hesitating or it means you don't care. And mm-hmm. you've got to just give them something, tell them something and just, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a lot of my job is knowing when to handle something on my own, when to reach out to someone from a different department to try and figure out the best solution to the problem at hand. Mostly it's just learning that it costs way too much energy to be way too angry about things and to understand that whoever is talking to you is a person and you should deal with them like people. A lot of the conflict resolution skills from the theater side of my life are directly applicable to learning how to be fast on my feet and calm and never freak out. Mm-hmm. I'm very good at never freaking out.
So. Yeah, I could probably learn that from you.
Oh, I'll give you tips. It's great.
So where do you see yourself in the next few years? Like, where would you like to be with your, you know, career at Wizards or with your improv? Like, where are you going?
I'd love to stay at Wizards for a long time.
Yeah.
This is the most productive, happy environment I think I've ever worked at. Mm-hmm. And my coworkers are amazing. I would love to be able to explore the more creative side of Wizards as well. There's so many stories being told and so many more people to meet. I really, really, really love it here.
Truthfully. Now, when you say the creative side, do you mean like possibly like, you know, R&D or story or anything with the cards?
I'd love to try out the story side sometime.
Yeah.
That's definitely something I'm interested in. I've spent most of my adult life learning how to tell stories, and I would love to somehow find a way to combine both of these things. But for right now, my heart is with the community, and mm-hmm. there shall I stay.
You make it sound so noble.
There is a noble in nobility to what I do. Most people don't believe that what I do is an actual career. So it's always really nice when someone thinks that, oh, I have an actual job. And I can say, yes, yes, I do. I have an actual person job that's actually real.
Now, I did put out the call for questions, and I didn't get very many, but the few that I got were all about the same topic. So I do want to address that with you. Something about you having a proclivity for GIFs, GIFs.
Oh, GIFs, yeah.
Yeah, what's that about? Because I don't think I've ever seen this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gifts. Yeah. So, quit word to the wise. If you would like for me or Sean or Nate or any of the other community managers at Wizards to communicate gifts with you, just send them to us in a nice, civil way, and I will absolutely send you back. That's the secret, is that community managers are people. And if you're nice, we'll definitely be people right back at you. When I was at Cheeseburger, I managed to gain a large collection of gifts just because I spent my entire time on the internet. My reaction gift folder is about 350 gifts deep.
Wow.
It's segregated by attitude, by emotion, by keywords. So if I ever need to look up something, I can just go into my bookmark manager, search for crying Tobey Maguire, and I have like six to choose from. I have a lot of crying Tobey Maguire. he's a great crier. It's hilarious. But yeah, I love GIFs. I really wish in real life I could communicate via GIF. it would be a lot more straightforward, a lot simpler. Yeah, I love GIFs so much.
Yeah, I have 50. I have about 50 right now, and I thought mine were excessive. And I have mine broken down by who is doing them. So I have my RuPaul's Drag Race GIFs.
Yes.
I have my Britney Spears GIFs.
Oh,
I have
good.
My Real Housewife GIFs. I have my Golden Girls GIFs.
Oh, man, those are, like, deep for each of those, too. Like, you've got a lot of different options for everything you've got so far. This is a good start.
Exactly. I have my my Toddlers and Tiara GIFs, which I recently discovered. I discovered one that was this little girl doing a spin with her middle finger in this beautiful orange dress with a tiara, and I was like, I can use that sometimes.
Oh, I'd use that, like, daily. That's lovely.
But yeah, that's typically my response to a lot of things. It's just, you know, especially when I feel like, you know, because so many things get lost in text.
Yes.
And, you know, we're not really sure what Erin's thinking. We're not sure what she's feeling. And I really want to convey something. One of my favorite gifts is, did you ever watch the show Don't Trust the Bitch in Apartment 23?
Briefly, yeah, when that was a thing.
Hilarious, if you ever get around to it.
Very
Kristen
good, yeah.
And Kristen Ritter was really the star of that show, and she has so many gifts that are so great, and I especially love her eye rolling one. I love to use that one, and that alone is a wealth of gifts right there. So
good. I feel like I really want to write my reaction gift folder into my will. Like, this is something I should bequeath to a museum.
But I think it's refreshing to have that approach because, you know, like we've talked about, you know, there is so much negativity on the internet and there are so many terrible places and you can't even really read the comments anymore without it bringing your mood down a couple of notches. So, you know, I'm all for those little things that can make me cackle. Like I know for the other day, I had discovered a blog that was these book reviews of every book R.L. Stein ever wrote.
Oh, wonderful.
I still have it if you're interested. And it covers.
I am, actually.
And we're talking every book, like
Yay!
Goosebumps, Fear Street,
his
fall apart bad adult novels. And it's just these really snarky book reviews. And I just laugh until I cry.
Like, that's the majesty of the internet. Like, there's terrible bits, but the best bits, like, just make up for everything else.
Yeah.
Let's see. What's a good one I found recently? Speaking of theater, there's one blog I found recently that just collects really bad community theater PR photos. Mm-hmm. So like really crappy shots of people looking emotional all the time. Like there's all sorts of wonderful, wonderful things on the internet. And that was what made working at Cheeseburger bearable, was being able to find like this weird random garbage. And it's just, I don't know. I'm such an internet kid at heart.
I also discovered, these buttons. Where, for example, there's one called the drama button. So, like, let's say you and I were talking in the office.
Yeah.
And you were doing some community manager stuff. And
sure.
And you said something really basic. Like, you were like, I got to get caught up on my retweet quota. You hit the button. You hit the button and it goes, bum, bum, bum. Like, the drama.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, lovely.
So, it's really great to have somebody take something really mundane. Like, you know, so I see the cafeteria serving chicken soup. Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah!
You do the drama.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, and then there's one of like there's another one of Ed McMahon doing whoa, and like you just randomly hit the button, and it just really throws people off. They're trying to be all professional, and you're like whoa. And...
Oh, I need like six of those. You know, in addition to the using GIFs in real life, we can just add on using audio drops as something that I would like to insert into my everyday life. That would be really nice.
I'm not sure if this is connected to that, but I have a pretty amazing email alert for my emails, which always throws people off. I'm a big fan of RuPaul, and she used to
as
do this,
you should be. Good.
Right? And she used to do this thing where she would do, "Ooh, girl, you got email," and that's my alert. And it's really great being in like a male-dominated game, and you're sitting down and you go to shake your opponent's hand if you're at a GP, and he's like, he's like, "Hey, my name is Stevie from around here." Ooh, girl. And he's just looking around like, what the fuck?
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I'm just like, that's me. Sorry.
So the current text message alert that I have you ever seen Riff Tracks at all? Any of the Riff Tracks? So the Mystery Science Theater 3000 people, after their show was sadly canceled, moved to the internet, and they do audio tracks for like modern movies and pretty much anything that's ever come out. And so you sync up the audio track from like, I don't know, your speakers, your iPod, whatever, to watching the DVD on a TV. And for every single Star Trek movie that they've riffed, anytime that Spock comes onto the screen, the guys who are doing the commentary will all just kind of Spock, 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 kind of like James T. Kirk used to do back in the original series.
Yes.
So my text message alert is this really breathy Spock. And I guarantee every single person who hears that for the first time thinks it's some kind of like weird come on and is really confused, and then I have to explain. I've refused to change it just because I like the novelty of having to explain what Riff Tracks is, and I really should actually change that. It's a little convenient. I keep my phone on silent like all the time because of it.
It's funny, when you were describing that, the scene that I kept imagining was like you and your boyfriend, and you're in front of a fire. I don't know why, but it's what I imagined. And it's like a Daniel Steele film. There's like soft lighting, and you're both in sweaters, and he rolls you over, and he looks into your eyes, and he's like, you know, "Allison." And all of a sudden you hear this, "Spock, Spock."
Spock,
and it just completely ruins the mood. And he's like, "What?" And then he gets up and turns the light on and hands you your phone, and then the mood is ruined. And that's just what I thought of.
Oh. Yeah. Actually, I have a feeling he'd probably be,
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to you on the show, how can they find you? How can they get a hold of you?
Yeah. My Twitter handle is Allison the Person, because my last name is hard to spell and I don't want people finding me that way. So Allison the Person is where you can find me on Twitter. That is it for right now. I have several secret Tumblrs you might already be following.
Oh, my.
So. Secrets.
But they can also keep up with you on the Wizard Twitter.
Yes, they can. I was just about to plug that. For official Wizards information, you can follow us at Wizards_Magic, or my personal account that I run is Magic Online. So follow both of those, and you'll get all sorts of handy informations for your brain.
Yeah, and even when we're not even talking to you, you know, you're really good about knowing when people are looking for something and catching those conversations and those words.
I am literally reading Twitter and Reddit all day at work. That is what I do. So, wow. I follow, one of the tricks of the trade is following several phrases. Mm-hmm. So I follow Mikko, I follow Magic Online, I follow Wizards Magic, I follow Modo, I follow lots of different things. So pretty much every conversation someone has where they invoke either Wizards or Magic or Mikko, I can see it. So your secrets are not safe.
Uh-oh.
But if you need help, I am always there.
Well, Allison, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm really happy that I was given the opportunity to get to talk to you. I feel like, you know, before this, we didn't really know much about you, and hopefully I've been able to give people a peek into your world.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was delightful.
Absolutely. And if anybody's enjoyed what they've heard here on the Deck Tees, you can always find the show first and foremost on GatheringMagic.com. The show is on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me a review and some stars. You can keep up with the show on Twitter at The Deck Tees. You can keep up with me at Original Estrus. And you can email the show at TheDeckTees@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.